Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop for another edition of our Straight Talk broadcast, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments at Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care. Find out more online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. And HighSpeedWeb.net that streams our signal 24/7, 365. So here we are in the midst of COVID-19, hopefully on the back side of it. And we thought it'd be good to get some people from the county who know more about this than I'll ever want to know. Trish Startup, who is the county's public information officer, and Professor Dr. Chuck Haynes. We've elevated him from Professor Dr. Chuck Haynes.
It comes with a raise.
It comes with a raise. Who's director of emergency management. And if there ever was an emergency, this is one. Have you figured this thing out yet, by the way?
Absolutely not. New data comes in every day, and we adjust accordingly. And right when we think we have it figured out, new data comes in, and we're right back to square one.
And this is unlike anything else, because if you go into emergency management, you will see binder after binder after binder after binder where you have built scenarios on what ifs. What if we have a hurricane? What if we have a flood? What if we have a busted power line? Boo, 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 boo. I bet you didn't have a book for a virus, did you?
We did for H1N1 2009.
Aha, how quickly did we forget?
But was it to this extent? Absolutely not. We planned as best we could with the parameters that we had at the time, and we planned for most likely scenario, not necessarily worst case scenario. Because worst case is definitely doom and gloom, but most likely the scenario that we went with was most likely scenario, and the thing that we missed, and I think everyone missed, was the data quality coming out early on. It just wasn't actionable, and that caused a long delay until that virus actually made it into the U.S., and we had data that we could trust. And that's when we actually started making some changes.
So the biggest thing that you are concerned with is, do we have enough medical facilities to take care of something like this?
Exactly.
And so how do you ramp up for that?
Medical facilities, we call it surge capability. So, for instance, we work with local facilities to be able to accept patients when ordinarily they wouldn't. And then the other thing is to be able to expand our hospital capabilities. And that really means, you know, field hospitals and MASH unit scenarios. We identified locations with the Army Corps of Engineers, with the National Guard, paired up federal resources and state resources to be able to expand our bed capability for those with COVID.
And Lord knows, you probably asked the question, do we have enough ventilators?
We had thorough conversations on ventilators, bed capacity, indigent care, from A to Z. We had to look at all of it.
So we were prepared for the worst. Fortunately, it's turned out to be much better than we thought.
Yes, and we'll take it.
And we'll take it. So this lady to your right,
yes,
plays a big role in this, because
huge.
Once this information starts to hit the airwaves, John Q. Public is saying, what?
Right.
So explain to me, or maybe Trish can explain it, how this coordination works between your office and emergency management.
Sure. So when we have a event, a crisis, whatever it may be, I come under the leadership of Chuck, and I join the emergency management team, and I communicate life-saving information to put out to the county. And I have an essential function, which is communications. It's called the ESF-15, and I lead that function. And then Trent Ferris from the Sheriff's Office is my backup, and he assists me in that essential function under emergency management.
So you bring in characters like this behind you? Homeland Security?
He does. I've seen him before in there. What really happens is, like you said, this is a different event or a different crisis. Usually we would all come into the MAC, the Multi-Agency Coordination Center, and we would all physically be there. And when I say all, we have a public information assistance team that emergency management and myself have worked hard to create. And this consists of the communication directors, PIOs from local governments, school districts. With this event, with COVID-19, we've reached out to Piedmont, and they have joined us. And then the State Highway Patrol asked to join our team for this event as well. And so we'll keep them on it moving forward. And so the main goal is when we have an emergency that affects everyone countywide, we need a clear, concise, consistent message.
Yeah, you need to have everybody saying the same thing.
Exactly. And so what we do is I went to Chuck and said, okay, we're at that point where we need to have this consistent, clear, life-saving message. Is it okay? Can you activate the team or whatnot? And he gave me permission to do so. And so we usually would kind of take shifts in the MAC, bring everybody in. You know, with any weather event, you would work 24/7 or however many hours, but this is a little different. We're physical distancing. So over email, we're sharing graphics with each other. We're sharing messages. Like Chuck said, we are just amplifiers of the message. We are not health experts. So from the very beginning, we knew our role. We're staying in our lane, and we are just amplifying the messages from CDC, South Carolina DHEC, the governor's executive orders, and we are amplifying those messages to our constituents here in York County and our residents to make sure they know the life-saving information they need.
Now, you take that information and you send it out in multiple places?
Multiple places. So we use social media at the county. We use Notify Me, which you can get information via your email, text message. Of course, we use the media, but we've also been doing we did a video with the sheriff and the chairman to push out, you know, stay at home when that executive order came out. We did a live Q&A Facebook event yesterday of, you know, this is not the time to let your guard down. Practice social distancing. Wash your hands. If you're sick, stay home. You know, we have to continue those preventative actions to keep not only ourselves safe, but the community and members of the community safe. So, and then each entity, if you think about it, they have their own ways of getting information out. The school district has their ways of getting information out. Other municipalities have their ways that they get information out. And so, really, if you each group has their own way to get their information out to the community that they know best, and if we all say the same message, then there's a trustworthy voice. And they know who to trust. And it cuts down on the rumors that start piling up in social media. Because now, as you know, social media has changed everything. And in the PR world, not only are we putting messages out, but we're also having this listening to figure out the rumors. And, hey, this has gone out on social media. We need to push a graphic out to say, no, that's not true. Or we need to do a rumor control page that FEMA did. We pushed that out to help cut down on rumor control.
So did you find a lot of your time was spent on trying to counter these rumors?
I think a lot of our time was spent on really taking in the information that was coming. And, Chuck, you can correct me if I'm wrong, from South Carolina Emergency Management, from DHEC, and from CDC, and pushing it out because it was constantly new and fresh until of, like, what you can do to, you know, stay safe. And then the rumors started coming after that, and at that point, it's when we would check in with our local municipalities. I sent an email, hey, what are y'all hearing that we can help you put a graphic out, put information out? I'd contact Chuck and say, what kind of calls is emergency management receiving that we need to put something out to diffuse that rumor?
And early, the rumor control was a lot of misinformation and misunderstood information, especially being a border county with North Carolina, with the competing messages from the governors, not necessarily conflicting or wrong, just different. And so we had a lot of questions coming in, you know, what does this mean for me? Does, you know, Governor Cooper's message mean something here? Does, you know, who do I listen to? And you know,
I live here and work there. What am I supposed
exactly
to do?
Live here, work there scenario. All that had to be cleared up, and where some of our counterparts in the Midlands, they just don't have to deal with that sure issue. Our citizens, you know, they get their news from Charlotte. So they have to actually seek out information coming out of Columbia. And so news programs like this focus on South Carolina. But if you go home and turn on your television, it's probably a Charlotte news market. So we had to deal with that delineation on
we did
what people mm-hmm should do.
Did you find that the number of calls coming into 911 all of a sudden started to ramp up, and the whole thrust of what they were asking for was something entirely different than what you normally have?
You know, we found, and we were in contact with some counterparts on the West Coast, and then we were in contact and still are in contact with some counterparts in parts of our state that have higher count numbers. And we've all seen a decline in call volume.
Surprise to me.
And not only that, we've seen, for EMS calls, we've seen a decline on people who want it to be transported. And so not only are there less EMS calls, there's less people going to the hospital. Now, we can attribute that to people not wanting to go where the virus is, perhaps. But a lot of people are waiting to the last minute to call for an ambulance. And we're seeing more sick people in the field, but less calls volume-wise.
Yeah, we've done several programs with Piedmont Medical Center talking about that very issue, that sick people are doing the wrong thing, staying home and getting more sick.
Exactly.
If there's ever a place you want to go to that you don't have to worry as much about who's got COVID-19, it's a hospital.
Sure.
Because they've done everything under the sun to make sure anybody who walks in that place is clean. And it's just it's hard to believe. You know, when Mark Nasaka got on here, you know, some of the stories he was telling about people who were sitting at home with appendicitis, you know, just and it wouldn't go to the hospital. Crazy, absolutely crazy.
Well, our EMS crews, of course, with Piedmont EMS, Fort Mill EMS, and then Lake Wylie, River Hills EMS, you know, they're all taking the proper precautions. They're there to help. They're taking you to a facility that's taking proper precautions. There's no reason to stay at home and get so sick that it's hard to come back from that. And we have seen, you know, your stroke and cardiac patients really wait too long to make that call. So we encourage people, don't let COVID be the deciding factor. We can deal with COVID. If you're sick, you're sick, and call for help.
All right. Now, I know you take these binders that have all these scenarios in them.
They're digital now.
Oh, I see. They're digital. Okay. Gee, I miss flipping those pages. Okay. So you take those files,
yes,
those digital files.
Yes.
And you're going to sit down with those after the event.
Of course.
And figure out what I've missed, what needs to be updated. I mean, is it too soon for that? I mean, are you already building a list of stuff?
We already have a list. And during any event, even if it's not our event, we keep good notes on what went right, what went wrong. We don't mind being critical of our operations, and we don't mind being critical of each other. You have to have sort of a thick skin, and it's all for the good of the citizens. If there's a better play in the playbook, and we're not using that play, we want to put it in play. And so being honest with ourselves is exactly what I think the citizens want us to do.
Well, let's be honest with us. What more could the media have done to help you with what you were trying to accomplish? We can handle it. No problem. We can handle it.
You know, I think Really, we've had all the media. I mean, you all have received the same information from CDC, South Carolina DHEC. I mean, the governor, the executive orders,
right.
Just continuously updating. I mean, it's just changing. Like he said earlier, Chuck did, we're just making adjustments as we go. And so for us, the media has just been really helpful in amplifying the message that we're amplifying is that, you know, there is no cure. There is no vaccine right now. Like the best thing you can do is practice preventative measures and getting that message out and having that clear, consistent voice is what you all have done as well with the COVID-19 crisis.
Do you think the media has overhyped this? In other words, some of the feedback that I get is, mm-hmm. I wish you all would stop talking about how many people have died, how many people this, how many that. And I think that that's a valid criticism, although you can't ignore it.
Sure.
But I do think there is probably a better balance that we might take into consideration next time something like this happens.
Yeah. And, you know, we have been inundated by certain national hotspots.
New York.
New York, yeah. And if you watch national news, that's what we're hearing about. We're not hearing about the large majority of the country that have really low case counts. And I'm not minimizing the virus. The virus is very serious, and for those with underlying health conditions or elderly, that very, very serious and obviously has caused death. But the media doesn't focus on what's going on in the U.S. as a whole. The national media, I should say. And so we get hung up. Every time we turn on the news, we get to see that, and that's what we start feeling like is going on locally. And it's just not the case.
No, in fact, if you take a look at South Carolina, I think we're like 280 or 285 deaths, something like that. You do that percentage-wise against 2 million people.
Sure.
It's like 0.00004 or something.
Yeah.
It's a very small percentage.
Correct.
Not trying to minimize that. But I think it has to tell us that the governor has done a good job in how he's handled this.
Certainly.
The local counties have done a good job in taking his information and pushing it out. And maybe people have been listening, although sometimes you wonder when you go to stores like Lowe's and it looks like a carnival down there on a Sunday afternoon and nobody even knows what physical distancing is all about.
Sure. And our county council has been absolutely supportive from a financial standpoint. We've enacted an emergency ordinance for making sure our procurement policies are being followed properly. This enables us to get FEMA reimbursement under the Stafford Act. And so all the things that we needed to do from a county council standpoint, there was an education period, and then we executed the disaster declaration, and it's still in place. And we're going to county council will revisit it. It doesn't necessarily change our way of government or our representative government that we all enjoy. But what it does do is cut the bureaucracy and cut that red tape so we can make decisions to save lives.
And Trish, this has got to go to you because who would have ever thought that we would be holding county council meetings via the internet?
Correct.
With people sitting at their homes and other people calling in? And I mean, that's a whole new world, is it not?
It is, but you know, when we were flexible and IT, myself, management, council, everyone was just flexible about learning how to do it, how are we going to govern via Zoom, and we did a couple practice rounds before we had our first meeting, just so everyone was comfortable and we knew we were doing it correctly, and then obviously for the public to attend as well, and so we know if we ever have a scenario like this or whatnot that we can conduct county business virtually, and I think we've learned that we can also conduct services. Like, we have not cut down any of our services virtually. We have employees working at home, remotely, or whatnot, and we're continuously delivering the high level services that residents are used to. So that was one thing that we have learned this with the COVID-19 pandemic, is that we can govern and run county operations virtually.
And it was interesting that your very first entree into this was a big public hearing that you had, and the numbers of people who you were able to tabulate who were tuned into that or zoomed into that, let's
correct.
Put it that way,
mm-hmm.
were very, very high as compared to a traditional council meeting where you might have, let's say, 100 people in the chamber.
That's we had a very large engagement for that meeting, and, you know, it was one of those things we weren't sure how many people to expect or whatnot, but through Zoom, people were able to call in as well, and then also just streaming it on our normal website, the normal ways we do, website and YouTube, we reached, I think, a little over 500, around 500 people. I don't have the number right in front of me, but we saw an uprise in our engagement.
Yeah. And I can tell you, we had plenty of people listening to it on the radio as well. It was very interesting. But it works, is the bottom line. The technology works.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I was teasing you and I was teasing the council members. This is a bit of all nights. You don't need this thing to crash on the night of inauguration night. And it didn't. It worked pretty well. All right. We got to take our mid-program break. Remind everybody that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2. Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax. You're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. And, of course, we broadcast live every day from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Chuck Haynes, pay attention. The magic cue card is up there, buddy. And as we're going to tell everybody why we keep coming in here, no matter the fact, can't even dine in, but we can take it out and we enjoy it. And the reason is, 1, 2, 3, slice, 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 slice. Garden, 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 garden. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
How's this for March Madness? As the world changes, so is our service to our friends at Substation 2. Effective immediately, whether you call in, fax, or order online at mysubstation2.com, we'll bring your order out to your car, or you can stay at home for home delivery. Isn't a great sub or salad from Substation 2 just what you need at a time like this?
Our lives have changed tremendously lately. Founders Federal Credit Union wants you to know we are here for you. While our world right now may be uncertain, your money at Founders is not. Founders Federal Credit Union is fully backed by the NCUA, and Founders members have many ways to access their money at Founders. Our drive-thrus remain open, many with extended hours. Our ATMs are fully serviced. Founders Online and the Founders app are available to you 24/7. Relax. We are your credit union and we are here for you. Not a member of Founders? Visit relaxjoinfounders.com to apply for membership.
My concern is let's not let fear of COVID cloud people's judgment about their health. We don't want people sitting at home with heart attacks, stroke, those things are life-threatening.
Piedmont Medical Center Chief Executive Officer Mark Nosaka, expressing his concern about those who fear coming to the ER.
People are still going to have heart disease. They're still going to have heart attacks. They're still going to need heart surgery. And we're providing all those services while we're protecting people from COVID.
Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care.
This is Danny Rogers with Paul Davis Restoration and Remodeling. If your home or business is damaged by water, fire, storm, or mold, Paul Davis is here to help. We are staffed with over 35 trained and certified professionals to handle any type of property damage. Our team mission is to provide extraordinary care while serving our neighbors in their time of need. Whether you need repairs in one room or rebuild a whole home, Paul Davis is here to help. Find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
How's this for March Madness? As the world changes, so is our service to our friends at Substation 2. Effective immediately, whether you call in, fax, or order online at mysubstation2.com, we'll bring your order out to your car, or you can stay at home for home delivery. Isn't a great sub or salad from Substation 2 just what you need at a time like this?
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2. Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Trish, start up with the York County Public Information Officer, Chuck Haynes, who's Director of Emergency Management. And we are kind of putting a bow on all the activities that have been underway here in the county since COVID-19 hit. And, of course, not only COVID-19, but the storms that are coming through here. God almighty, last night was something else. And I couldn't believe the pictures that I saw Greg Suskin put on his Twitter feed of the hail down there on Highway 9 in Chester. It looked like a major snowstorm. So when these sirens go off, when they go off, they immediately get my attention.
Yes.
And I, as they should, and I'm immediately grabbing my portable radio, and I'm thinking about going underneath the house where I've got a little bit of a storm cellar, because those sirens are not good news.
No. So we use the sirens as outdoor warning devices, and what that it means is exactly the title. It's to warn people who are outside that something's going on. And it may be something with the Catawba nuclear plant. It may be a weather-related event. But we want people to tune in to media. That's what it means. It doesn't mean evacuate. It doesn't mean shelter in place. It doesn't mean anything except tune in to find out what's going on. Now, the last time we activated the sirens was when the tornado threat was coming through. We were in consultation with the Greenville-Spartanburg National Weather Service, and they were seeing the storms that were lining up over in the Greenville-Spartanburg area and aiming this way. And so we activated the sirens one time, and so that was to give people who were out on the lake and other areas that may not have been aware that it really wasn't the first storm that we were all that concerned about, even though we were concerned about that one. That one was very far to our north, right on the border. It was the subsequent storms that we were also concerned about. And we got some, you know, positive feedback. And this is a practice that has been in place long before I came to York County. And we continue that today. I would venture to say about half the population likes it. And about half the population probably doesn't, and so it's a challenge.
I think it's absolutely wonderful, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. Now, how close did you come to flipping the switch last night? Because those tornadoes, they thought were going southern part of the county. How close did you come?
Well, we were watching, and again, we're in consultation with the meteorologists over in Greenville-Spartanburg. Last night, we didn't get to the point where we had a tornado warning. So the actual tornado warning within the 10-mile area where we have the sirens around the nuclear plant is where we can use them. So if there's a tornado warning in the far western side of the county where our sirens won't reach, we don't sound them because it doesn't help anyone. If that same cell is going to enter into the area with the sirens, we will sound them for that.
Now, if you get down towards McConnell's, right, you're right on the edge of that 10-mile area,
sure,
from the siren?
And we use them. We use them there, yes. We have studies that we know how far out the sirens can be heard. And one of the complaints that we do hear, and I need to address this, is I was in my home and I couldn't hear them. And they're if you think about it, this is 1950 technology. And homes are built so much so differently than they were in the 50s. So now we have these really, really tight houses that have all these soundproofing and all these nice things that we don't hear the airplanes and we don't hear the cars going down the road. But they also you don't hear the sirens either.
Now, we also need to remind people that these sirens are tested.
Yes.
Quarterly.
That's right.
I've forgotten what it is. The first Tuesday of the... I forgot what it
is.
Yeah,
Wednesday.
Yeah.
But yes, so we're required by FEMA and the NRC to test them quarterly. And there's some movement to move to a digital warning. So cell phone, iPods, right, and things like that.
That's what we need. Well, Trish Startup, thank you very much. Thank you very much for being with us today on our Straight Talk broadcast, and thanks for all that you do for York County to keep us safe.
Thank you, man.
And that's going to wrap up our Straight Talk program live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. My thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments at Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. And, of course, we hang out here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Why do we do it? 1, 2, 3. Slice, slice, slice.
Garden, garden, garden.
Have a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.